And so when we're thinking about treasure, I'll just start off by asking you, what would you be willing to do to get, say, $1 million, large sum of money, immediately? What would you be willing to do? And there's something in each of us where we're prepared to go to great lengths, right? We're prepared to go to great lengths to do something to get something of great value for ourselves, whatever that might be, to acquire something that's precious to us. We might spend time, we might spend energy, we make these difficult decisions, we might even neglect relationships, all to get our hands on something of great worth, something precious. But imagine spending the best years of your life, spending your life savings, neglecting and even compromising relationships, only to find that this treasure, this thing that you've been pursuing, is worthless, that it's just monopoly money, paper in the wind, completely useless. What a waste that would be, right? What a complete waste of a life. What a complete waste. And today, in this passage from Christ, Jesus reminds us that we are in fact all seeking treasure. By our very nature, we're seeking something precious. That's part of who we are. We're seeking treasure. We want to find something that's of great value. And it's interesting because he's not worried that you are pursuing treasure. That's not the point. It's actually a good thing to be pursuing treasure. What he's worried about is what kind of treasure you're pursuing. Are you chasing the right kind of treasure? When you finally get your hands on it, at the end of all your striving, all your working, all your achievements, will it have actual value or will it be worthless? This is what Jesus is teaching in this passage here. He's telling us to choose our treasure carefully. Choose our treasure carefully. We're going to break this passage into three parts. First, we're going to see what treasure grips your heart. What treasure grips your heart in verse 19 and 21. Then the second part is what treasure influences your mind in verses 22 and 23. And then what treasure controls your action in verse 24. So we're going to look at treasure that grips our heart, influences our minds, and controls our actions. So let's begin. What treasure grips your heart? Let's read verse 19 and 21 again. Let's read those few verses together. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So when Jesus is saying treasure, he's not just limiting it to money, right? It includes money, but it's much more than just cash, right? When you hear treasure, think of anything that you might hold as precious, anything that you might prize in your life. Think of it as this driving force in your life, that thing which gets you up in the morning, that thing which keeps you going through those tough and difficult times. And as humans, as we've just said, we all treasure something. Jesus isn't telling us to stop treasuring something, which is precious. He's telling us, seeking something precious is good. Seeking something precious is good and right. But making sure that it is actually precious is what is key. So his command is clear. In verse 19, this is a very, very direct command from Christ. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Do not do it. So let's try and understand what he's talking about. What is this treasure on earth? Is he saying that we are to live from paycheck to paycheck with no savings in the bank, no provisions for the future? Is that what he's talking about? I don't think so. And I don't think the rest of the Bible supports that idea that you have to be living on the poverty line, as it were. We see in the Bible full of God honoring people who are also rich. And the Bible expects us to own property and money. We think of the eighth commandment. Do not steal implies that somebody else has wealth and that you have wealth. And the Bible expects us also to use our finance and to provide for our families. So this is not Christ advocating for poverty. But he's talking of something much more significant. It's actually something much more significant than the number of dollars in your bank account. He's talking about what can take hold of your affections and your loyalties in this world. What are you loyal to? What holds your affections of your hearts in this world? And it could be, these are your earthly treasures, right? It could be your possessions, your car, your house, money. But it could also be your health or your physical abilities, your talents, your giftings. These can be things that hold your affections and have your loyalties. Anything that you may hold dear or may be pursuing. And so it's much more. It's much more than not storing up stockpiles of money for yourself. This is a reality check in a way. These things on the earth, they're all passing. They're here today and gone tomorrow. They're all prone to be destroyed, damaged, corrupted. These things can be taken from us, right? Robbed, through illness, through war, even through, you think of business collapse, inflation, accidents, natural disasters, or just the simple passing of time, right? Just the simple passing of time will take away these treasures. And of course, we're all ultimately will be parted from these earthly treasures by death. That's something that we will all face. So Jesus tells us, do not store treasures here on earth. But he does give us an opposite, an equal command, right? He says, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. So what does he mean by that? How do we make these deposits into a heavenly bank account, if you like? Let's turn to 1 Timothy 6 together. 1 Timothy 6, and we're going to look at verses 17 and 19, and this will give us a little bit more detail on this idea of storing up treasures in heaven. In verse 17 it says, as for the rich in the present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainties of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They, that's the rich people, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, and to be generous and ready to share. Thus, in verse 19, thus storing up treasures for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. So did you pick up on that in verse 18? How does Paul, when he's talking to Timothy, how does he explain how we can store up treasures in heaven? He listed three things, right? He said, we do good. We do lots of good works, rich in good works. We are generous and we are ready to share. Basically, he's saying we're to use these worldly things, these treasures here on earth, all these blessings we have, all these things we've been given by God for God's glory, for the good of other people and the advancement of his kingdom. The focus is on other people, not on ourselves. It's on how you can serve others and help them, not on how you can maximize your own happiness and your own pleasure. So when Jesus is saying, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, it's referring to really a change in mindset, right? It's a complete change in mindset, a change in heart, if you like. All of a sudden it's a different goal that you're pursuing instead of treasures here on earth. In our human nature, we seek treasures for our own good, right? That's just who we are. We seek treasures for our own good, for our own pleasures. But Jesus commands us to seek treasures for the good of others, to serve others, and ultimately to glorify God. So what is your treasure? What do you prize the most? What are you willing to pour time, to pour resources into? What are you aiming at in life? And this is not asking what's your choice of career or what's your career, but it's what's the purpose of your career? Why are you doing what you're doing? And Jesus makes it clear there's two targets, an earthly one or a heavenly one. Which target do you hope to hit? Which goal is in your heart? Are you storing up treasures on earth or in heaven? And now, so don't get me wrong. Aspiring for a good job, making investment, developing our gifts and our talents, they're good things and God-honoring things. The danger is what place they have in our hearts, what loyalty we attribute to them. Is your career or the hope for a career your everything? Is your car, your house, your property, your everything, that thing that keeps you going? Maybe it's your health or your strength, your sense of humor, your ability to interact with people. How would you feel if those things were destroyed or taken away from you? Because these things, these earthly things, will not last, Jesus warns us. We can't make these things our treasures. We can't make these things the things that our hearts are loyal to. Instead, we have to use these things, these gifts from God, to make heavenly treasure that will last, that will never fade away, and which will have eternal value. So, with these two treasures in mind, let's move to our second point, where Jesus is asking, what treasure influences your mind? So let's look at verse 22 and 23 again. What treasure influences your mind? Verse 22, it says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Now the key here to understanding these couple of verses is figuring out what is he talking about with the eye? What is he talking about? And he's really using the eye, our human eye, as an illustration of our perception of the world, how we look to the world and the things in the world. It's talking about your understanding, your argument, your reasoning. It's your mind as you perceive the world around you. It's the lens, if you like, through which you perceive the world. And so here Jesus is giving us another reason for not storing up treasures on earth. Not only will these earthly treasures be eaten up and destroyed, but if your heart lies with these earthly treasures, it will result in your mind being full of darkness, your mind being full of confusion. So what does Jesus mean by a bad eye then, or a bad mind? And so let's just draw out this illustration, right? A bad eye is one which is blurred or has troubled vision, right? Double vision, blurry, unable to see properly, unable to see clearly what's in front of you. That's the picture of the bad eye. And so Jesus is saying, if your treasure is on earth, your mind will not think clearly about the world around you. Your mind will be influenced by prejudice, by lusts, by the desires of this earth. It'll be influenced by these earthly treasures. There'll be no clarity on how you think. No clarity on how you assess what's in front of you, the opportunities and the things that come your way. And Jesus touches on this, on the sad irony in that verse, at the end of that, of those verses, where he says how blinding the pursuit of earthly treasures can be. People pursuing earthly treasures are convinced. They're convinced that they're seeing clearly. They're convinced that this is good and right and fulfilling and the best thing they can be doing with their time. That they think that they see the light, while in fact, they don't actually realize how blind they are. And that's what Jesus is saying in that verse when he says, if then the light in you is darkness, if the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? If you think you see clearly, but you're completely blind, how blind you really are. How tragic that is. You think you are seeing clearly, but in fact, you are in great darkness. And this is the reality of one who is pursuing treasures here on earth. But if your treasure is in heaven, your eye will be good, Jesus goes on to say. That is, you'll be thinking clearly about the world around you. You'll be thinking clearly about the opportunities and the influences that come your way. That person will see the folly of pursuing worldly things. That person will be marked by spiritual understanding and perspective. Their thinking will be dominated and regulated by truth and not by the clever lies of the world. They want to glorify God and serve people, and that will motivate their thinking. That will direct how they think about things. And so in verse 21, we learn that where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. But these few verses that we've just read could just as well be summarized as where your treasure is, there your mind will be also. Your main aim in life, your treasure, will influence how you think. And as we will soon see, how you think will also influence how you act, what you do. So by nature, we possess a mind which is bad or full of darkness. So we must be active to clear that and strive to think and see clearly. And so, do you think that you see clearly? Now, if you think that your perspective on the world is absolutely crystal clear, then, from Christ's words here, then you're probably still blind. And what you think is light is, in fact, darkness. So don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by the wisdom of this world, which makes you think that you see clearly. Don't let the words of Christ be true of you, where he says, if then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? But what else is stopping you from seeing clearly? How do you think about the opportunities that the world offers you? Now, some opportunities are blatantly sinful, right? They allure our flesh and our desires, but they're clearly prohibited by Scripture. So we know these are wrong. But it's not just evil or sinful things which stop us from thinking clearly. In Luke 21:34, Christ says that he talks more about this matter, and he says, but watch yourself, lest your heart be weighted down with dissipations and drunkenness. Now these are clearly sinful things. Don't let dissipations and drunkenness weigh you down. But he goes on to say, and cares of this life, and that day come upon you suddenly like a trap. Even these cares of this world can cause us to not think rightly. Things, just simple things that where we live, what we eat, our career, our education, our investments, our holidays, all these things and more can be these cares of this life that can hinder us from thinking clearly. And if your treasure is not in heaven, the cares of this life will trap you, and they'll warp your thinking and not make you think clearly about the world around us. So how are you training your thinking? How are you helping your mind to think clearly about the world around us? And yes, we know first and foremost, to think clearly, our treasure must be in heaven. But as mentioned before, by nature, we possess an eye which is evil. So we need to recognize this and we need to work to clear our eye, right? To remove that fog. So what do you feed your mind? What do you allow yourself to be influenced by? What do you watch? What do you read? What do you listen to? Do these things help you or hinder you from thinking clearly, from thinking rightly about the world around you? Or do these things blur your vision and kind of reinforce the lies of the world around us? Do they reinforce truth or do they reinforce lies? What are you feeding your mind? What are you letting your mind be influenced by? Can you say yes and amen to when you compare what you're feeding your mind with Philippians 4:8, where it says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things. Do you actively make sure that your mind is full of these truths, of this light, of this whatever is pure and lovely and honorable? So having thought about what treasure controls our hearts and what treasure controls our minds, that brings us to our third and final point. What treasure controls your actions? And we can see the progression of Christ in this passage, right? It goes from what's precious to our heart will then affect how we think, and how we think will in turn affect how we act. And so in verse 24, let's read that verse again together, where he says, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." So Jesus is talking about service now, right? He's actually, these are the things that we do. These are our actions or our active choices to do or not do something. And again, we have a contrast, right? Two opposing things: serving God or serving money, serving the King of Kings or serving our little kingdom of self. And the key thing he drives home is that it's impossible to serve both. Impossible to serve both. We can't kid ourselves to be like, "Oh, I'll serve God most of the time and money some of the time, the other rest of the time." And we cannot fool ourselves that some devotion to money is acceptable as long as we balance it off with some Christian stuff. No, he says you'll either hate the one and love the other. You will either calculate your every move, set up situations, take opportunities, interact with people, and behave in such a way to maximize what money can do for you. Or you will calculate your every move, set up situations, take opportunities, interact with people, and behave in such a way to maximize what God wants you to do for him. You're either hoping to get blessing from money or trusting God for that blessing. But money and God, they give opposing commands, right? They require different things from us. Their commands pull us in completely different directions. God commands you to walk by faith, while money commands you to walk by sight, to see this money enter these numbers in your bank account. God commands you to be humble, while money commands you to be proud. God commands you to be generous. Money commands you to keep it all for yourself. God commands you to look to eternal things, eternal purposes, while money commands you to store up treasure here on earth. Money makes a great slave, but a terrible master. We must use money, these treasures on earth, to serve God. It's a mere tool to put into his service. But money makes a terrible master, not only because it's deceitful and it never satisfies, but mainly because it takes our service and our devotion from our rightful master. We cannot serve two masters. You cannot walk in two directions at the same time. It's impossible. Jesus demands single-minded, wholehearted followers. Anything less than that is not acceptable. And it's impossible to be devoted to both God and money. If you serve money, it's a display of hatred, a rebellion against God. Do you see how serious this is? How the love of money and worldly things impacts our very soul. It attacks our allegiance to Jesus as our King. There was a man who lived a long time ago. And this man was seen to be a godly man. He was a dedicated follower of Christ. He saw God do mighty things. God even used him to do miraculous works. This man healed the sick. He even drove out demons. Yet this man was a lover of money. And when an opportunity presented itself, he betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. Yet Judas walked alongside Jesus, served him, was his disciple, heard his teachings. And yet he served money, and it destroyed him. So take some time. Ponder the choices that you make, the opportunities that you take, the things you pursue. Do you listen to the promises of money? Do you trust God for your happiness, or believe that money makes you happy? Do you live your life for the pursuit of money instead of using your money to pursue God, to run after Him? What do your actions reflect about who you are serving? Saying yes to serving money means saying no to serving God. There is no both and. There is one or the other. Another way you can search yourself is asking, when are you prepared to put in the hard yards? When are you happy to work late, to do those extra tasks? When times get busy, what falls off the radar? What do you neglect? When money gets tight, what do you cut back on? Ultimately, who do you listen to? The commands of God or the commands of money? We are either serving God or we're serving money. And our actions reveal who we serve. And who we serve reveals how we're thinking about this world. And how we're thinking about this world reveals where our treasure is. It's either on earth or it is in heaven. And so in closing, I want us to remember the command of Christ in this passage. Everything else we've looked at flows from this command. Was meant to persuade us to listen to this command and to take it seriously. And the command was, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven. So if you want your service to be God, to be to God and to God alone, don't start by trying to change what you do. Don't start by trying to change your actions. If you want your thoughts to be thinking rightly, don't start by trying to change the way you think. If you want to serve God, if you want to serve and to think rightly, your treasure must be in the right place. Change that, and everything will flow from it. The most precious thing to you must be to glorify God. And then you will think right. And then you will act right. And your service will be to God and God alone. And it all begins with where our treasure is.